Hi, and welcome back. My name is Michelle Young, and I'm here today facilitating our podcast, Heartfelt Consciousness. And we have Lori and Sherry here today with us to talk about the second pillar of their book, Standing Room Only, How to Be That Yoga Teacher. And this pillar that we're going to be discussing today is character. And I think character is actually something that I believe is so important. And even the sutras talk about character. So I'm really excited to dive into this topic today. I'd love to talk to you all today about what are some elements of a class that really boost it from being just an average class to a really exceptional class.
I'll just say something real quick. As a practitioner, for me, it takes an ordinary class and makes it an experience. It is perhaps multisensory. It perhaps has more depth than just poses. It's full of connection with my teacher. I'm intrigued. I want to know what's coming next. And there's a presence. My own presence is there because it's so engaging. It's so great. It's got me. It's holding me.
Mm-hmm. And I'll say character is what I think takes a basic class into an extraordinary class. And I referenced this on one of the earlier podcasts. I taught group fitness for a long time. And then I started to teach teachers about how to be better teachers. And we were talking about what makes a great class and what makes a marginal class. And I think that the things that come up that make it a great class are what are elements that teachers can bring in to create that extraordinary experience. And so it can be technical things like accurate cueing, that you're presenting different options for your students, inviting them to try different things, use props if they want to. It's safety, it's starting and ending on time and stuff. Those technical aspects can really make the difference for the students. And what Lori was talking to is there's also an essence that we bring in. And we've talked about how some of our communication is verbal and most of it is not the words that we say. It's how we say it. It's our non-verbal communication. And so it's more this essence. It's an authenticity that comes when we are doing our own yoga practice, when we're doing our work, when we are rooting in. This essence is able to come through in how we teach, and that comes through in confidence. It can come through in our energy level. It can come through in our focus. It can come through in our positivity. It's our presence. It's how passionate we are, how much fun we invite into the practice. And so there's also this essence level that happens. And then there's things that I think a lot, and I think students would recognize all that I've talked about. But then there are these outward special touches that can be things like themes that we add in as yoga teachers. And for me, I like themes because I think it brings together things that are happening off the mat and on the mat and within the student. And so it sort of weaves all that together. And if we're able to bring that into a yoga class, again, it makes it so that they may not remember that they did half pigeon during your class, but they remember the quote that you gave them, that you started the class with, you ended the class with, and you used some coaching statements in the in-between to really help them get what it was that you're talking about as they were doing their yoga practice. So I think there's a lot of different ways that we can bring this character in. It's the music, it's the lighting, it's, I used to have when I would do a quote, I would put together little pieces of paper that had the quote on it. Because many times I would use a quote particularly at the end in Savasana, and people will say, "Where did you get that quote?" And I said, "Oh, I'm glad you asked. They're out in the basket, ready for you to take with you. And I hope you put it on your mirror, and I hope you think about it more." And so I do think that character is what takes it from just a fitness class and makes it extraordinary. And I guess I will add one more thing, and that's just really good customer service. Like, I like to think about when I'm greeting somebody into the studio, I'm welcoming them into my house as though they were coming over to have dinner with us. I welcome them. I see them. I call them by name. I treat them well because I want them to have a complete whole experience. And that is what brings that character into the classes that I teach and the whole time you're with me from start to finish.
I love that. Let's talk a little bit about how we, inject tone into classes and what that looks like and how teachers who are aspiring to, you know, to facilitate extraordinary classes can leverage this concept of tone to create more character in their classes.
I would say, especially for people who are just coming out of their teacher training and just working with the technical aspects of teaching a class, really focus on that first. We can trip ourselves up if we try to, if I just started teaching and I said, I want to teach just like Michelle Young. Okay, Michelle, how many years of teaching experience do you have?
Almost 20.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Okay. So it's going to be really hard for me to replicate and be Michelle or be like Michelle because I'm just starting. And so really start where you are, meet yourself on your mat and start where you are, and then start to just barely add in little things to add that tone, to add that character. I also will say practice your sequencing, your cueing way before you get to the studio so that you're not having to think so much about it. Even if you use the same exact framework of a sequence for your classes, let's say for your first month that you're teaching, and maybe you can vary it just a little bit so you don't get bored and your students don't get bored, but get the technical parts first, then start to add in some of this character themes and such that we're talking about. And then the other part that I would say happens off the mat or outside the studio is everything you do for your own yoga practice. It's your meditation practice. It's your own yoga practice. It's doing self-inquiry. Maybe that's through journaling. Maybe that's through reading books. Do your work. It's the rooting part. It's the most important thing. And I think it's a little bit ironic because in the book, we talk a lot about technique and how to do certain things. But the essence that's running through the entire book is to do your work, root into yourself. And that's what's going to come out. That's what's going to create the tone, the authenticity that you bring. And Michelle, it's not like an on or off switch. I think it's that continual, I'm on my journey and I want to share that journey with you. And oh, by the way, I'm teaching you a yoga class at the same time.
I love that. Lori, I'd love to get your perspective specifically about how students pick up on tone and character. You know, what Lori or what Sherry, excuse me, is saying is so important. Doing our own personal work, maintaining our own personal practice, I believe that really shines through. And from a student's perspective, I'd love, you know, to hear your thoughts on how it shines through.
Yeah, when we talk about the tone and the character, and as I'm listening to Sherry talk about the some of those elements, the word that comes into my mind is coherence, this kind of aligning of all the vibrations into this like coherent channel. And so what Sherry was saying about maybe don't try everything at once because that's going to give you a scattered tone, but maybe just really sit with what you already have and then maybe add one thing in. And so I think that's how it feels to me on the student side of the room.
Yeah.
And Michelle, I would add in as well, and this is something that we did in our teacher training. It is often revisiting why you teach yoga. Why is your yoga practice important? Why is teaching important to you? Why do you want to share your yoga practice? And I even write it down, and it changes from time to time as my practice deepens, as I understand myself better and the different roles that I play. If we go back to that, I think you call it a heartfelt purpose. If we go back to the why, it helps us rise up as we're teaching. And I think that that's something that we can bring in every time we come into the room. If we're rooting and if we're going into that heartfelt space, it can't help but come out. And I think that's really important, is to go back to your passion and go back to your why.
And you're talking about moving from your core, teaching from your core.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that that is actually a mistake that a lot of new teachers make. They think that they have to be all of that at the beginning. And, you know, really the most important thing, like you said, is to establish the technique of just, you know, creating a sequence, facilitating that sequence, you know, making sure that the container is safe and people feel held. And if you're in practice, if you yourself are in practice, it will start to just naturally, you know, imbibe the entire room with that energy that your practice gives you, you know? So I think that's a really great point for sure. How does character play into sequencing? What are the big ways that we as teachers can leverage the concept of character, the concept of tone, tonality, to influence our sequence, our sequencing?
I like to, let's say I'm introducing a theme, and let's say I have a quote about like opening your heart, trusting others, even if you've had, you know, different situations, maybe small T trauma. You know, sometimes I'll do that maybe around Valentine's Day or something. So I also like to think about poses for me that are, that help me understand trust, that help me feel and embody opening my heart. And so I try to marry together the theme that I'm trying to do with the music that I'm also including, and also the poses and sequencing that we're doing. And the nice thing about that is if I get it, if it's come to me organically or authentically, it's something that I can say in this pose, think about, or I can drop in a quote, and it's just something for them to get it a little bit more. So I'm trying to pull together, yoke together, bring that union between what's happening for them physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. And if I can weave that in, and I will say again, a little bit of just a disclaimer is get your basics first, and mm-hmm. then start building these little things in this, these pieces of character in one step at a time. Because if you try to do that and you're really needing to just focus on point A to point B and getting them through their poses, you're going to trip yourself up and it's going to be more frustrating. So layer it on just a little bit at a time.
Mm-hmm. Lori, what do you have to add to that sentiment?
Yeah, you're making me think, Sherry, about how much I really appreciate a well-themed class and the sequences that go with it. So if we're doing something really earthy, I love that there are earth salutations in there instead of sun salutations for a change. And the whole class has this, again, I'm going to use the word coherence this time, meaning it makes sense around this theme, and it's maybe getting me into my root chakra and loosening things that I need to have loosened. And it's like an hour of really marinating in this certain intention and vision that my teacher has, and that is character.
And I will say I've had some of the best times putting together playlists that are around a theme. And so one day my theme was WTF, where's the fun? And so we did some fun poses, ones that we don't usually do. And we were playful. I even gave them playtime if they wanted to. But the songs were I put together, and it was appropriate for the time slot that I was teaching, because I usually did like a rock and roll class, but it was sing-along songs. So, you know, like we were in side plank and we were doing Sweet Caroline, you know, and their upper arm is up, or I have them do jazz hands or something like that. I mean, I think it depends on your audience and it depends on your studio, because of course you want to stay within your protocols. But I think that having your personality come through is that authenticity, that tone, that essence that brings people coming back. They like you. In fact, there was a study done, we quoted in the book, and it was something that Yoga Journal put together. And it was about why people like their yoga classes. And like 64% of it was because the teacher was warm and inviting. It had nothing to do with the poses. That was the highest percentage, was that they liked the teacher. And so if you are you, and you love your yoga, you love sharing your yoga, I think you can't help but draw in the students that are supposed to be there with you and give them the experience we're talking about.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Absolutely. What other elements of character do you see, especially you've brought up theming a couple of times, and I think that's something that, you know, is an advanced skill. It's hard for people to theme. And especially integrative in an integrative way, where we've got asana, we've got cues, we've got, you know, metaphor in there, we've got the whole shebang. So, you know, talk to me a little bit about how this impacts theming.
I would say too, and Michelle, you've probably given this advice as well, is if you do want to step, if you feel you're ready to step into theming, be really simple about it. Find a quote that maybe is part of your spiritual studies or something you've heard or a book you've read or a movie you've seen, and bring it in and state it at the beginning, maybe put it in the middle when they're holding a pose for a while, and say it at the end, like the same quote, and just let that be your theme. Be super simple. You do not need to be complicated to make a theme effective. But yeah, theming, and I think theming is probably one of the easiest ways to do it. But I think character too is the teeny tiny things. Like if my students, if I have my students, let's say it's an early morning class, I don't want the lights up, bright lights, you know, to welcome them at 6 a.m. Little dimmer lights. And then as we get going, bring the lights up a little bit. If they're laying on their back at the end of practice, put the lights down a little bit. I don't want to be looking up at these bright lights. It's the sound, it's the volume of the music. Maybe there's no music. Maybe part of the practice is you just want them to tune in, and you say that to them today. I invite you, we're going to practice with no music today, and I'm inviting you to tune in and notice your breath a little bit more, and maybe even notice where your thoughts are. And then even if that's the only thing you say to them, maybe two or three times, where are your thoughts right now? And then you just lay it out there. Like it can be super, super simple. And it's these little things that I think can enhance the way that you deliver your practice to your students and the way that they get to experience your practice.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Laura, do you have anything to add on that?
Yeah, I really like what you said, Sherry, about bring in the thing that you're working on. Because I've had my teachers do that before, and it's I'm a teacher in a different arena, but I've heard it said that if you really want to learn something, you teach it. And so if I have a teacher coming in, sharing with me what they are exploring in such an authentic and deep way, I want to do that too. And it's resonant. It I want to go along for that ride. And it just works when you're doing that.
That brings up some wonderful points that I'd love to explore a little bit organically. And, you know, we're talking about character, we're talking about tone, we're talking about, you know, sharing our personal practice. And we know, because we've been in the industry for a while, we've been teachers and students and practitioners for a long time, that there's a fine line between authenticity and production. So what, you know, what can we do as teachers to prevent ourselves from projecting, you know, onto our students in a way that's maybe not beneficial, you know? And I'll give you an example of, you know, some things I've seen. You know, I've walked into a yoga class before and, you know, there's been some sort of, you know, like perhaps there's a political election going on or something, like maybe the teacher just, you know, was rear-ended on the way in to teach or something. And they are sharing and they're sharing from an authentic place, but perhaps it's not the place to share, right? And so how can we sort of gut check ourselves as teachers to make sure that what we're sharing is beneficial and it is like can be applied to all walks of life. It could be applied to the people in the room, et cetera. And that it's a teaching moment rather than like a time for internal study.
I think it is that Goldilocks approach again, too much, too little, just right. And it's going to depend on you and what's happening and also on your audience. But I also am getting more of the clarity of what you're saying is I do think there's a line. I used to take, it was not a yoga class. It was a kind of a dance class. And there were some days she would come in and tell us stuff that you're like, wow, too much information. I just came here to get a good workout. And so the other part of what you said towards the end is, I think if it's something that could be a collective, like many people have experienced this type of frustration. So let's say the rear-ended on your way there. Maybe not everybody was rear-ended on their way there. Hopefully not. Maybe only a few people have been rear-ended. But at the core of that, what is it? It's something that was unexpected. It was something that was shocking. It was something that scared you. And those are core things that I think the collective can understand and connect to. And if it's something that, let's say 95% of the people in your class could relate to, that probably is something that I can share from an authentic space. If it's something that's so isolated and the way I present it is very individualistic. This happened to me and I'm projecting this out on you. And I don't care if the rest of you have ever experienced anything like this. I think that's the too much side of it. And I guess I would go back to what is the general concept of what it is that you're sharing. And if many or most people can relate to it, then I think you can bring that in. I wouldn't go into a ton of detail with it because then that's sort of like in service of me, the teacher, instead of in service of you with your yoga practice. But I think that would be sort of the barometer that I would use is this something that most people can relate to, or is this just something about me that I'm dumping on my students?
I love that, Sherry. And I think that this, you know, conversation is so beautiful because people want to share. They, you know, that's one of the things that, you know, I get feedback on in terms of like, you know, the way that we lead our 200 hour. I know you went through our 300, but in the 200 hour, there's a very substantial emphasis on projection-free teaching. But I'm certainly not telling people not to share life experiences, right? So like finding that line is really important. But I love what you said, you know, take the time to sit with it and find the common denominator. You know, okay, so you just got in an accident and maybe that's not what you lead with, because there's all sorts of different perspectives. You know, some people might be concerned for your well-being. Some people might be activated because they experienced a very, you know, intense trauma around, you know, car accidents. You know, so there's all sorts of different ways it can play out. But if you say, you know, if you walk into the class and you say, you know, I just had an experience that, you know, really tested my yoga, you know, like you just bring it back to the yoga. And that's one of the things that we're always telling our yoga therapy students is, you got to bring it back to the yoga. It's always got to be back to the yoga. I think this is another example of, you know, what was the underlying thing that, you know, bubbled up that, you know, gave you the space to bring your yoga into the present moment and help you to regulate and come back to a balanced, you know, place where you can hold space for the class. Because that's another thing that students pick up on is if you're not able to hold space for like yourself, for example, or for the situation, they can feel that, you know. So taking the time to share that commonality, I think can set the tone for a shared experience rather than like a personal projection.
I will say too, something that you said that I think is just brilliant is for self-inquiry, how does this come back to my yoga practice? And we could do that with anything that happens in our lives. And we can share that sentiment. I mean, it could be something like not really going into the detail of what happened, but saying there's something that happened along the way as I was coming to the studio, and it brought me back to my yoga practice. And think about something today that maybe happened to you. And how can we, through our practice today, bring it back to our yoga practice? Like just that can be enough of a theme that it doesn't go super deep into any details or projection, but it invites each person to try it on. And then they don't have to. You can say, or maybe you're just here to move and breathe, and that's okay too.
I love that, Sherry. That is so insightful. And I love specifically giving the students the prompt to think about it in the context of their lived experience. Because sometimes I do think that we as teachers, you know, inadvertently fall flat. We're like, oh, here's my theme. And then we just move into sequence and we don't really give the space for the student to think about how it impacts or applies to their lived experience. So I really love that. Thank you for sharing that.
You mentioned your question was originally about projection and projecting projecting a situation or projecting. I can't remember. You said politics or values or something. Did you, were you going?
There was a political experience that I've had, you know, in the past. I'm not the only person.
Yeah. Sherry and I actually took that on a Facebook Live the week. Was it the week of inauguration, right before inauguration? So we found an image of the Tao. It was part blue, part red, to kind of symbolize what half the people were feeling really one way and half the people were feeling equally the other way. And we put out a question to our community, what is the role of a yoga teacher in this? Is it to be neutral? Is it to not approach it at all? Is it to use your megaphone for the things that you really are passionate about? And so we ended up with what you were just saying about use your yoga. Because if we use our yoga, we are no longer on this side or this side. We're zoomed out to the whole. And we are able to walk the middle way and not alienate this half of the class or that half of the class when you don't may not even know what you might say that could alienate them. So I think that it takes a lot of self-inquiry to get to there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Just another reason why these pillars are so important to continued growth in this profession. Before we wrap up for today, I'd love to talk a little bit about how to balance sequences so that they challenge students, but that they're not like too challenging. And, you know, specifically one of the things that I hear a lot that I don't, you know, I have, again, mixed feelings on is I'll hear teachers say things like ride your edge or find your edge and stuff like that. And, you know, that's not always what we're going for. And then some students get it in their mind that that is yoga, that yoga is riding the razor's edge between, you know, what is painful and what is, you know, challenging. And, you know, I'd love to have you speak a little bit to using the theme or the, not the theme, but the concept rather of character to help you to create sequences that are again in that Goldilocks zone that are just right.
So, yeah, I think that we do talk about pushing our comfort zone and we're right on the edge and that's where growth happens. And I believe all that. I'm saying it as though I don't, but I do. But I also would invite people to think about, so for me, I love to push. I push all the time. I'm an achiever, so I'm always striving. And so the challenge for me is to step back, and it's not to push myself to the edge. If I see everybody in the room trying one-legged crow and I'm like, oh, I really want to try that, my competitiveness comes in. The challenge and the growth for me is to go, no, my shoulder is hurting today, or I'm not feeling it and not doing it. And so it doesn't mean that we physically push everything, every pose to the edge. Maybe the challenge is to step back. But in the book, what we talk about too is the, as teachers, it's something, especially when I started, I would get going on some sequence. I'd be putting it together ahead of class and I've suddenly realized I've been on my right hip for 5 different poses. And so being aware of that and trying the sequences ahead of time so that maybe if it starts on the right leg and you're really testing that hip and the glutes and all the supporting muscles around that, changing in your sequence. So it's more of a technique thing the order of your poses, come off the right leg or relieve the hip, like coming out of extended side angle and giving a little break coming into reverse triangle. So you straighten out that hip or switch legs. You've been on your right leg and then you come to the top of the mat. Now let's take some balancing poses, rooting down through our left foot. And so you move it over to the left hip. Same with shoulders. I think that we, you know, our shoulders and our wrists, if we're doing so many chaturangas and we're on our hands a lot in plank or any of the poses, it's something where we really need to give them some relief. So let's get them off of their hands. Let's pull them back to the end of their mat and into a forward fold and even have them do some wrist rotations. And so being cognizant that you're not getting so heavy in one area of the body that you're giving them a break. You're still challenging them. They're still going to do it on both sides. We just mix up the order so that we're kinder to the bodies in the room.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. I actually have a style of sequencing that I call a Dutch braid that, you know, you go up like 2 poses on one side, then you take the other leg and you go back 2 or 3 poses, then you hit it the second side. And it really does help to balance. It also helps to keep people on their toes and keep them present, you know, which is another benefit to that type of sequencing. So
well, and it can even be, let's say you're open to warrior 2, bring them to like a wide legged forward fold on the long end of the mat and then take them around to the back side of the mat. You've just switched them from their right leg to their left leg. Yeah. And you can do that on both sides. You balance it out, not only sequence side to sequence side, but body side to body side. And so just thinking through those things, because, and what you'll see as a yoga teacher, if let's say you have them, if they've gone all through a sequence and you have them in, say, standing splits or something, they'll come out of it, they'll shake their legs, there's too much on that hip. And take mm-hmm. that as a cue, and know that next time you set this up, give them a little bit of a break.
Absolutely.
And I love all of those technical details of what you gifted teachers are doing. And I will also say that, zooming back to the essence of it, you're not only getting me into a pose, you're getting me into my body.
Mm-hmm.
Both of those things.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's the I think the fundamental role we play as yoga teachers is teaching proprioception and interoception through the lens of the body. And I think it is so important. Just beautiful conversation. Well, thank you so much for being here again with me today, and for going over this second pillar of powerful teaching. And again, you can get Lori and Sherry's book on Amazon. The link will be in the description. Standing Room Only, How to Be That Yoga Teacher. And I'd also like for y'all to remember that Sherry is one of the panelists for a recent webinar with Yoga Alliance. And that is also going to be linked in the description of this podcast as well. You can get CEU credits for watching that even after the fact. So go check that out. Tell us a little bit about what you talked about on that webinar.
Yeah, so if you go to the Yoga Alliance digital events calendar and look up previous events, you can find, I actually have three different webinars on there, and I've done them with two co-presenters, John Cottrell and Allison Russell. And the one that we recently did is called 10 Things You Need to Know About Being a Yoga Teacher. And what we focused on is the roles and responsibilities that you take on as you're when you're a yoga teacher. And so we had 10 tips about three different levels of commitment to yourself as a yoga teacher, commitment to your students, and commitment to your fellow teachers and teaching team and the studio where you teach. But we also addressed unexpected situations that can come up when you're teaching yoga. In our yoga teacher trainings, we talk about, you know, what happens when, you know, somebody has stinky clothes and they keep coming in and those types of things. But we actually talked through some specific situations and gave what we called the four A's of handling unexpected situations. And like Michelle said, you can get continuing education credits for it. And we made it kind of fun by telling our stories. So hopefully you'll go and check it out. And if you have any questions, let me know. I'm happy to answer them.
Beautiful. Well, thank you so much, Sherry. Thank you, Lori, for being here. And we will have Sherry and Lori on the podcast again here in a couple of weeks. And we're going to be talking about the other three pillars of powerful teaching with Lori and Sherry. So thanks, y'all, for being here. And we look forward to talking to you soon.
Thanks so much, Michelle.
Thank you.